On today's Of Record, we're talking Apple and their AR goggles, our podcast past peak, dating apps, Taylor Swift tickets, ChatGPT, and to wash it down with some beer preferences. All this on today's Of Record.
Of Record is a podcast focused on the marketing and advertising industry from the perspective of industry expert Joe Clements. Joe Clements is a co-founder of Strategic Digital Services, a digital marketing firm based in Tallahassee, Florida, and founded in 2014.
I'm Joe Clements, and this is the podcast Of Record. Hey everybody, it's your group of your favorite delinquents podcast host and producer back in the studio, somehow for the first time this year. We've missed a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. It's been busy, don't judge us. In here with co-host Kirsten.
Hi.
And producer Alex. Got the scream there.
The Wilhelm scream.
The Wilhelm scream. Yeah. So we just started the year, had some, I think, Alex, you were out the first week of the year. Second week of the year, we were on our company retreat. And then last week, we're catching up from our company retreat. And now we're finally back in the office and ready to podcast. So we've got a slate of quick hitting stories for you. So the first one out of Bloomberg, Apple postpones AR/VR glasses, plans cheaper mixed reality headset. So Apple had long been rumored to actually show this year a pair of AR glasses that you would just wear 24/7. It was going to be the future, and it was going to be the future this year, but the future has been delayed, and now we're going to get Apple's version of the Oculus Rift, it looks like. They're calling it mixed reality, which makes me think you'll also have some AR features, but I think the technical limitations of putting everything in a pair of glasses probably weren't working as planned.
Mixed reality sounds like we want to leave the door open for like as much as we can put into this that doesn't maybe fall quite into the AI or AR category. Like it's like the most broadest. It's like, oh, I'm going to Target to get stuff. Like,
yeah,
it just seems like a really broad term to encapsulate what they want to do with it.
So it's going to be it's going to be expensive to experience reality as Apple conceives it. It's going to be about $3,000. That's compared to Oculus's $1,500. Has, quote, advanced high-resolution displays, more than 10 cameras and sensors to determine where a user is looking, and both a Mac-grade M2 processor and a dedicated chip for handling AR and VR visuals. What's interesting to me is the name. Did you guys catch the name that they filed patent for?
Mm-mm.
Reality Pro and Reality One.
That's uncreative.
It's uncreative, but
remarkably dystopian.
Well, I was
that
say,
reality would be the thing that isn't real.
That they're gonna have the whole brand of reality.
Mm-hmm.
That is dystopian. Yeah. But it's very clever. It's very basic. I will agree, though.
Yes,
it's
Apple is going to own reality.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Apple.
When you turn, when you
branded reality.
When you're talking about it, you're going to refer to it as reality, and it's going to be really meta.
Yeah. I had my reality on.
Yeah. I was doing reality last night.
I was doing reality last night, which would be real confusing because what you literally mean is the opposite of that.
Doing reality last night is like what I say. I see my therapist.
Yeah, doing reality last night. I was in a fake pretend world of my own conjuring last night. It's called reality. Mm. Oh, Reality Pro or Reality One? Reality One. I really couldn't afford a Reality Pro. I'm hoping to get it next year.
So you said Apple was doing a cheaper version of what they were doing?
That's expected out maybe next year. The speculation is Reality Pro is going to be the one out this year at $3,000, and then they'll get another one out at the Oculus price level at the $1,500 range.
Well, Oculus even has models that are, I think the Quest is like $500 or a little bit less than that.
The new Oculuses are? Yeah. Well, I think they released two. They released like a lower end one, and then they released like a higher end gaming one.
Okay.
And the higher end gaming one, I've heard people talk about being very impressed by it. maybe I should buy it and, you know, get into reality instead of living in the unreality that I inhabit now.
Will anyone here be an early adopter of reality?
I'm sure I want to see. Oh, I'm looking at, apparently the battery is a problem. The headset's battery is, it has heating risk of a head-worn product, so it can get too hot.
You cook your brain. You sous vide your brain.
And I guess you hold the battery outside of the glasses themselves. The battery hooks onto your belt or goes in your pocket or whatever.
Oh, God, no. It's like, I'm not going to be an early adopter on this one, folks.
They got to work out those kinks.
You don't want your head to explode from reality? Reality set my hair on fire.
And where I don't want to hold the battery that's going to overheat and, like, burn my hand.
Yeah, weren't people...
If you're lucky, your hand. If it's in your pocket, other things.
Weren't people afraid of, like, sleeping next to your phone by your head gave you cancer? So what the heck does this
mean? I still am.
Like, what does this mean?
Now they just pump that just through the air generally with 5G. to activate your vaccine.
Okay.
Well, on the topic of conspiracy theories... what was the one you were telling me about from this weekend's NFL games?
Oh my gosh, there's a conspiracy going on that Damar Hamlin is actually not, like, either in the hospital or he could be dead, because he was at the Bills game with the Bengals and he wouldn't show his face. There was no way you could see his face.
But even more mysterious, hood up behind glass in a box, but the glass was very reflective of light on the front, so you could just see a shadow behind the box.
I mean, you couldn't even see him when he was on the cart walking around. They had it, like, all... Like, why were they trying to hide it? Like, wouldn't you be, like, trying to get him on the field to give a motivational speech?
Yeah.
Speech, or, like, walking out and waving everybody as everyone goes, USA! USA! Like, or something like that. Like, and then, like, Bills Mafia, like, jumps from the stands and breaks a bunch of tables. Like, why wouldn't the NFL want that?
So what's the non-conspiracy theory?
Oh, that he would, that he's fine and he does live streams all the time, that he's, like, already talked about. I mean, he's not dead. Yeah. Okay. But it was really odd that the NFL was acting like they had a doppelganger or, like, a stunt double in for him.
That he just didn't know that he was on when he was on camera and it was cold, so they just had the thing closed and his hood was up.
Yeah.
True.
Not as interesting as the conspiracy theory one, but I guess we'll take it.
It was funny. It's a funny, like, huh, but, like, there's no way, like...
But when I watched the shots, it was weird. I was like,
oh, yeah.
Why are they showing these shots? You can't even...
It was, like, his back, like, his face would be against the glass. Yeah. Like, so you couldn't, like...
You can't even see who this is.
It could have been anybody in, like, a tracksuit with a puffer jacket on.
So, there's a story out of eMarketer here that we may have reached... Peak podcast.
Yeah, that was an interesting one you put up.
There were 202. I'm sorry. There were 80% fewer podcasts launch than just 2 years ago. There were in 2022 219,000 podcasts introduced, compared to 337,000 in 2019. More individual episodes are being updated. There's 26.1 million episodes published in 2022, up from 18.1 million in 2019. So what it looks like is things are getting filtered out. The podcasts that have been started and lived are publishing routinely, like your Of Record podcast. Pseudo-routinely. We're publishing routinely, and then everybody else has just kind of fallen off. And the challenge of getting a new podcast discovered is such that it's like, meh, why do it? I can just get famous on TikTok.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think it's that people aren't being discovered, or do you think people are just kind of not doing, like, recording podcasts anymore?
I think a little bit of both. I think one is, from a commercial perspective, it is hard to get discovered. It's a very full medium at this point. But two, there's just other things people are interested in now. They'll do YouTube, or they'll do, you know, TikTok, I think, is a big competitor.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was going to say, does YouTube face this problem? Like, there's so many YouTube channels where everybody wanted to be a YouTuber. Still, a lot of people want to be a YouTuber as, like, a career. Do you think there's a fall off?
It might compare to TikTok. Because one of the things I think TikTok does is gives everybody the chance at some point to spin the roulette wheel and maybe viral and maybe have an audience. And the other platforms don't really tend to do that unless you invest heavily in it. You basically have to do it full time almost to build an audience.
Yeah. This is like the equivalent of like the 1800s of I'm writing a play. I'm doing a podcast.
I'm writing the great American novel.
It's like, oh, you and everybody else, buddy. I'm developing an app. It's going to change the world.
My app is going to change the world. So also out of Bloomberg. Bloomberg making a big appearance on the show this week. Dating giant Match Group, which owns all of the dating sites, but Tinder? Is that the only one they don't own?
Tinder, I think.
Or Hinge? They don't own one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Is moving dating app Hinge's most expensive subscription to $60 a month or $720 a year.
Hopefully you're not on it for a full year.
Yeah, I mean, they say it's the app you're meant to delete.
Yeah. So.
Well, that is a very bad business model, my friend.
Pay $60 and then find the love of your life in a month. And then
don't come
done.
Back? That's a very bad business model.
Probably unrealistic.
See, it's weird for Hinge to do that kind of model because, like, on Hinge, like, you don't want to be on Hinge. Like,
why?
Because it's a long-term dating site. Like, if you're on Hinge for a long time, like, I'm sorry, it's just not going well for you. Because it is intended to be deleted.
Is that the app for people who are looking to settle? I'm looking to settle right now. What's available?
Hinge is very upfront. It's no games. This is people that want long-term relationships. This is people that want to get married. Like, it's not, and it forces you to, like, be more social with them. Like, Tinder could probably run this because Tinder is for hooking up.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to constantly be on Tinder if that's your game.
All right. So I see what we've done here. We've replaced like prostitution and pimping with Tinder, and we've replaced arranged marriages with Hinge. Brilliant.
There's other sites for that, I think, that are more popular, but.
No. I think the way you got to do it for mass market is you have to make it like winky that it's not that. Winky face, not that.
Don't think people are doing prostitution on Tinder often. It's just people that like casual sex.
Every now and again.
They're not professionals trying to like make a career out of it.
How do you know?
Because they go to OnlyFans.
So, and of course, this market is huge. They own, by the way, Match.com, Hinge, OkCupid, Plenty of Fish are their biggest ones. The thing that I've always found interesting, and I was just teasing you, Alex, about this, about the dating sites, is of all of the tech companies, I think they have the most perverse incentives for operation because it makes no sense for them long term, I guess unless you can charge $720 a year, to actually produce good matches. What you would want to produce, if you could algorithmically or using the AI, and you would be heavily incentivized to produce like very intense matches that are gratifying, become toxic at some point and end and push people back onto the app. You want people churning in and out of the app as much as possible. Otherwise, you're losing the marketplace. And there's some natural churn in life with people breaking up and divorce and stuff like that, but you don't want that. What you want is user retention. Like, you don't want people who are just there for 3 months and find the love of their life and leave.
Don't you think that a part of it is if your friend, like my one of my cousins got married from a Tinder match? Mm-hmm. Like,
I know people have gotten married from Tinder.
Wouldn't that inspire their friends and everyone else to get on Tinder to maybe find their match?
Yes, but I've also seen some kind of nefarious ad campaigns that they run through influencers, which will be things encouraging people to exit relationships. It'll be ads like, you deserve to be happy. find happiness. Like, and it'll be, you'll look at who's promoting. It'll be like, you know, a Tinder thing, or it'll be a match thing or whatever.
So I want to get those.
my guess about where this all ends up going for the dating sites, and it makes total sense that it's a huge market, even though what I find is most people resent being on it to some degree. I mean, do you agree or not?
I mean, like, is this a personal question or
no? Well, no, but I also just talking to other people, it's like, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, people don't enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
But, like, I like it because I like to be weird and just flip through people. And, like, it's like people watching from my couch. Mm-hmm. So, like, I like it. And I like to see, like, people in different areas when I travel and stuff. So, but like, I know, like, I have friends who are like, I've given up on that. I'm not doing that. Like, that's just like, it never goes well.
Yeah. I prefer just to meet people when I'm out and about or
mm-hmm. the old fashioned
friends of friends.
Organically, as they say.
Yeah. Organically. I can see for a lot of people why it may be hard to do that because you have to be relatively sociable and have a big network of people and not be at your house playing video games all the time. What?
Rats.
Oh, no.
It's okay. The only friends I need are my Sims.
Man, wouldn't it be funny if there was a dating app for Sims?
It would just be all women.
Simmon.
Oh, wait. Like a dating app within the Sims
within
for my
Sims?
Within
the Sims for the Sims.
There used to be. There used to be. Sims 4 does not have that. You used to be able to do online dating in the Sims.
Oh, dear.
It's something they got rid of, and I'm like a lot of the community's not happy.
So, the community's not happy. Great subtitle for a book. What do you think is the direction that dating apps end up going? It looks like there's been some specialization in terms of the type of relationship people are looking for and maybe the terms of weird kink or fetish people have. Mm-hmm. Where do you see that moving to in the future?
More niche, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Which we were just looking at that article with the different kinds of dating sites that are out there, which was an enlightening list.
Yep. Like maybe there's a new dating app that's exclusively for people who just want to fling and then go away.
Yep.
I don't think a lot of those people even want to admit that they just want to fling. I think there's a portion of them that do. And there's a portion of people who are just like, I don't know what I really want. I'm kind of here for fun. But I think that is
the type of plausible deniability that women need to operate on a dating app for that.
Yeah.
I don't think that men generally need that sort of deniability on it, but I agree with you that women need it.
Because think about it. Like, you don't want to go on an app that's, like, specifically for, like, it's directly marketed as a hookup app, and then your employer or
that'd be called Grindr.
Yes, but, like...
Because that's how men interact.
Yes, but, like, what I'm saying is, Like Grindr's for, like, gay men.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking about something that's just, like, across the spectrum for everybody. Like, because if you're on Grindr and you see somebody on Grindr, like, you'd have to admit you're on Grindr.
Yeah.
Like, if you were going to go after them, it's like, well, you already are there, too. So, but, like, for a fling app, like, people could download that as a joke or whatever. And, I mean, I guess you could do it with Grindr,
Well,
too.
It would be 90% guys, firstly, if it was expressly that. It'd be 90% dudes.
I actually think you underestimate, like, how many women.
Especially. No, but I don't underestimate that piece. What I don't believe is if it was expressly that you would have a decent ratio of men to women. I think in order to have that, you have to have the, like, basically what Tinder does. That element has to be there where, oh, yeah, you could meet somebody you're serious about. But if the app was just called Hit It and Quit It, there'd be no women on it.
There would be women on it. I just don't think they would retain them for long. Because I think most women will do that for, like, a couple different guys. And they get really hurt or they get really sick of it. And then they're, like, off of it.
Yes.
Like, it's fun for a little. And then it's, like, you meet the wrong person and it becomes dangerous. And it's, like, no longer fun.
Yeah. Which is why I would be very quickly 90% men.
Just continues rotating.
Yeah, it just continues rotating.
One girl leaves, the next girl comes in.
Well, that's like the sociologist's hypothesis about dating apps, is what it does is produces, essentially replicates, short-term polygamy.
Because,
well, so the argument from the data from the apps, which is what is really interesting about them, is... 5% of fewer men are actually successful on them. Most men get no matches because most women aren't attracted or interested in most men. Mm-hmm. Women are more selective. So 5% of men get all the matches. Those those men have no pressure or incentive to pick one woman. So they're in the privileged market position to have multiple partners kind of rotating through at the same time if they want them, but no incentive to pick any one of them. But then as women churn out, there's just new women churning in. You don't actually need that many women for the top 5% of men to always have 5 or 6 different partners. So you've recreated this weird form of polygamy where most men have access to no mates. The women have access to a few mates, but they're essentially shared.
I don't know if I would classify it as polygamy, more like polyamorous maybe, but polygamy would require you to be married within it.
Well, so the sociology of polygamy, what it causes is that the distribution of mates is not equal. You have a few men with all the mates. Most of the men have no mates. Most of the women are sharing. Polyamory would be you're at the same time. This isn't that they're at the same time, and polygamy often isn't that they're at the same time.
So you think most men on dating sites would be dating several women at the same time, and those women are not aware of it?
The men who are getting dates on those dating sites are 100% dating multiple women at the same time. But it's a very small portion. Most men are not getting matches. The most attractive, highest status guys get a lot of matches, have a lot of opportunities. And like, that's not just me like making this up. That is like, there's a book written by OkCupid's data scientist earlier in the year that backed this up. And there's been several sociologists that have looked at the Hinge data and the Tinder data, and it all shows the same thing. Okay. Men find like men will match with like 80% of women. Women will match with less than 20% of men.
Yeah, because most of the guys that are on dating sites are not it.
Correct, which is why 5% of the men get all the attention.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So from a market-making standpoint, you actually don't want to rotate out those guys because that's what all the women want. And you can't have those women leaving because those are the women that the guys getting all the attention want. So you have to be bringing them back on over and over again.
The best thing I think that they can incorporate to like upgrade apps is sending matches and sending people to your friends. Because like how many times I see somebody that I'm like, oh, that would be a good match for someone I knew. Like that kind of story. I think Bumble might do it. I know one of them does it. Not Tinder, though, I'm pretty sure, because I've tried to do it on Tinder. But like if you like saw someone or had a conversation with somebody and you were like, actually, I want you to like meet my friend, like to send them like that request and they can like automatically match and start messaging. That would be a really good.
I think if you started a company that did that, you would be extremely successful because you do a couple of things with it.
Yeah.
One, you involve people who are in relationships but are vicariously interested in who you're dating.
Yeah.
You also involve people who care about you and know you and maybe even have better judgment about what's good for you than you right. do, who are filtering people for you.
Right. Like call it wingman or something like that.
Yeah.
Like I think that would be a really
good. Or call it human history.
The old-fashioned way.
The old-fashioned way.
Hey, have you met my friend?
Yeah.
I know a guy.
I know a guy.
You should meet my sister.
Yep.
But, like, I mean, that frequently, like, when I'm going through, I see that all the time. And I'm like, sometimes I even take a screenshot and I just send it to my friends. But I'm like, what does that do for them? Because they don't
know. You can't really connect with that person.
Because you don't know their last name. And it's like, how many Peters are there in the world?
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't.
It's almost like you would have an app where, like, 3 of your friends, if they selected the same person, that would forward the match to you.
Yeah, that'd be good. Like, if I could have, like, a group of, like, I could network, like, almost like a Facebook kind of sort of style. Like, I have my group of friends and stuff like that, and we could just send each other into the group. Like, this would be good for, like, Polly. This would be good for Sarah. Like, whatever. Like,
but
just go.
How would the feed work?
So I think the feed would work is you would be – so you would have a friend at the top, and it would just be – so I'd be looking through, and you'd be like, Kirsten. And I would just be swiping through people and looking at them, and like, oh, is that a good match for Kirsten? And if I wanted to go do, you know, somebody like Helen, I just switch to Helen's thing. So you'd have to have some way of verifying friends and relationships,
mm-hmm.
like in your like very small 1 degree social network.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of those people that you're allowing to vet for you.
Yeah. I would say like, yeah, you maybe like have like, I don't know if you call them like groups or parties or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like maybe there's like 5 people you can have in a party or something like that. And like you could just do, I like that. But also I was just thinking that all they have to do is just have a share like button on there and just hit share. And then it just, like, just like TikTok. If I was going to share a TikTok to somebody, it just goes right to their messages.
That is so intuitive. Kirsten, I have to imagine there's a reason that none of them have this. I just don't know what it is. It's got to be a problem with their business model or a problem that they have with privacy.
I was going to say, I think
like
it's
you
a
might
privacy.
Accidentally out somebody.
Yes.
But again, if the app was made for it and you could opt into it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is a privacy
But again, you'll
thing.
Just screenshot them if you knew, like.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's what doesn't make sense about this whole, like, it's not anonymous when you're on these apps. It's anything on the internet's not anonymous, especially when you're making a profile for yourself. Like, if you're going to be a swinger, just you're going to have to own it if you want to put a profile out there. Like, if you want to be available, you're going to have to own it. I guess I'm assuming it's just privacy. I guess maybe if somebody had a like restraining order, could be a problem. It's all it's going to take is for like one person to like get hurt over this. That it would
millions of people. Hundreds of people are going to get hurt.
People die on Tinder all the time.
Yeah.
Like so. I mean, I don't know why they
did
don't.
Half of serial killers work for him
for Tinder?
Dating apps.
What?
Dating apps did, if you think about it, like the serial killer stuff, that dating apps do half of his serial killer's work for him.
Oh, I thought you meant like serial killers work at Tinder.
No.
I was like, that doesn't make any sense.
It's done half the work, right? Because they all almost have a profile. So it's very quickly to swipe through profile, see who's vulnerable to you through text, see who you can persuade, manipulate, and then get them out. The problem is you leave a track record of doing that. But.
Right. It's not very hard to find somebody on like Tinder or something, even if you just have their first name, because often you'll know where they work or what they do for a job. You know what like they look like.
Or if it's like a town like this.
Yeah.
Probably 1 degree separated. You probably know them.
Several times people have like tried to friend me on Facebook and I'm like, who the heck is this guy? And then they'll send me a message request. I'm like, hey, I saw you on Tinder. And I'm like, ooh, that's really creepy, man. Like you went a whole extra step to try to find me on Facebook. Neat.
Yeah, if you want to catch Kirsten, just catch her on the weekend.
Oh, you can cut that one out. cut that.
You catch me there too.
What were some of the funny 12 weird dating sites? Not weird, but different types. One of them actually I want to talk about is this weird fascination with luxury dating apps. That's like date people in your bracket. Like date people that are rich, date people that are it's exclusive. Like you have to get invited into this. But none of it's actually exclusive. It's like all like a facade. Like date a millionaire. Like they're like, oh, you might find millionaires in your area. I'm like, okay, where I live and where probably most people in America live, there's not like
I can introduce you to several millionaires. They're just all married.
Yeah, exactly. They're either married or why would they be on a dating app that's like, find me, the millionaire. Like, it doesn't, like, and like.
Find me, the millionaire.
Like,
Mr. Moneybags.
I can't remember the name of this app. Oh my gosh. But it's like, they act like it's very exclusive. Like, you have to put your name on the waiting list.
Farmers only?
No,
Farmers only? No, I didn't even see it on that list. Hold on.
Raya.
Is it?
It's Raya.
I think it's some. There's another one out there that does it because I get
it
ads
accepts
for
only 8% of applicants, which I feel like is high.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe it is Raya. But it's like it says that, but I think everybody gets on it because it makes you feel exclusive, and it's just such a weird, fake making people feel special for no reason. I'm trying to see if there's any other ones that I was trying to think of right now. But do you think that's a good, like,
my issue just from dating is so much like marketing that I think you can segment a lot like marketing. My concern would be the more validation you do like that on the front end, the more overtly predatory people are going to tend towards. I don't mean criminally predatory. I just mean like predatory in terms of like, this is where the rich people are. I want to get on that. Mm-hmm. It just seems like it. And look, rich people hang out at the same places and the same type of bars and restaurants. So that happens in real life. I worry that the formal validation of something like that, though, creates a scenario where there's just a lot of people out there just looking to use you for your money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I am just going through the apps right now on the marketplace, and I forgot about Ashley Madison, and that's still a functioning
thing. Oh, really?
It is.
That was another site where there was no women on it, by the way. That was one of the big things from that leak, is it was like
all
8% were women and everybody else was a dude. And what Ashley Madison was doing is they were seeding profiles. They were paying women to make fake profiles. So there were some women on there.
That is so, oh, that's so interesting. I completely forgot that even was like a thing. Like, until I just, it just says, Ashley Madison, life is short. Number one for affairs and NSA hookups.
What's NSA?
Not safe. I don't know.
No strings attached.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. So there's another one where, like, that's going to be 95% dudes.
Yeah. Those are the hookup ones. I just saw really a lot of interesting ones when I was scrolling through that. But some of the other ones we saw was, like, the mustache one. There's a furry one. There is a – what other ones were on that list that were really funny?
It just gets too weird at some point.
It gets a little too segmented, yeah. Too, mm-hmm. I think.
It's overfit. It's an overfit target audience. The mm-hmm. target audience is too small, and therefore you become less likely to find your target match. Mm-hmm. Just like advertising. The Goldilocks zone. Can't be too big. Won't find the right. Can't be too small. Got to be just right. So another story, big one. Are you ready for this one, Kirsten?
Yes.
How to CNN, Live Nation exec will face lawmakers about Taylor Swift concert ticket fiasco. Lawmakers are set to grill top executives from the event ticketing industry on Tuesday after Ticketmaster's inability to process orders for Taylor Swift's upcoming tour left millions of fans unable to buy tickets or without their tickets even after purchase. I'm actually curious what their message is going to be. I think they're going to stick with, oh, there's so much traffic and we didn't blah, 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 couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I'm curious if they get outed for what I really think happened there, which is intentionally not investing that infrastructure, intentionally trying to create a fiasco to drive attention and make people want them even more. But
do you think that that will actually happen?
I don't know. It depends on how aggressive the media is about it.
Yeah. I mean, hey, they got the right person to be the face of it. Taylor Swift is, like, at least it's not like, oh, it's a Zach Bryan concert. It's like people care, but like Taylor Swift, everybody would.
I think the key factor there is this Taylor Swift turn on Ticketmaster.
Yeah. If
Taylor Swift turns on Ticketmaster, they're probably screwed. Most likely, I don't think Taylor Swift
can turn on
Ticketmaster because I think it just cost her too much money.
Yeah, she can and she won't. I mean, that was very evident the day that that happened, that she took so long to put a note out.
Yeah.
Like, be like, I'm really sorry, guys. That was weird.
Sorry. Pay up.
Like, it wasn't like, I mean, like, of all the things she could have said, like, I mean, you could tell that, like, she was not going to rock the boat with that one.
You can always tell in an industry who wields the most power based on who nobody is willing to criticize. Yeah. And, you know, people criticize labels, people criticize venues and artists and media, all that gets criticism. You don't really see criticism of the ticket distribution.
Yeah. Is this going to impact, I think, concerts in the future? Do you think, does it even matter?
I don't know enough about how the industry is structured to know what the outlets are, how easy it is for a competing service to surface in some way. I don't know the details of it.
Yeah.
I think they just are going to have a few years now that big acts are touring again where they can get away with basically murder because people just want to go see live acts and the acts need to tour because they haven't been able to tour in
right.
You know, a couple years for some of them.
It's a weird industry, I won't lie. Like, I mean, even with the Astro World thing, like, people died, and they're still like, the show goes on, y'all. Like, let's just keep going. Like, I don't know. It's a little odd.
So, two more stories here before we end. Microsoft confirmed it's making a multi-billion dollar investment in OpenAI, the startup behind ChatGPT, the artificial intelligence chatbot. So Microsoft is, and I've seen some demos of this, integrating ChatGPT into its Office suite, which means Clippy is going to become sentient. How horrifying.
Oh, can I get like a little virtual one that sits on my desk?
Oh, I bet you can.
Just like a little hologram.
And it'll report you to the authorities.
Oh, no. Whatever will I do? It's not like my Amazon Echo already does that.
So I think this is interesting because it's going to put Bing in a position of maybe being relevant. Because they'll probably be first out of the gate with AI-based search, which we talked about last episode, kind of blows up Google's model. They will, in their Office suite of products, what we use with like Jasper AI will probably start to just be baked into Microsoft as an additional subscription in Word. And then some of the Excel spreadsheet stuff I've seen is pretty amazing in terms of giving the bot instructions to fill in data from the internet to do write very complex formulas for you, just telling it in natural language. So I think there's going to be some pretty substantial things coming from Microsoft. What I think is going to be underappreciated about this is how compute credit is about to be almost as important as money in white collar work world.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause we've been experimenting with it, and the way it limits you is by the number of words you generate, which it's trying to limit the amount of compute power you're using.
Yeah.
So I can see a world where employees are given like a compute budget to use for the AI every month, and then they have to decide how they want to use that every month.
Yeah. This is going to be interesting for like Microsoft Word. If they adopt that, I mean, Google's going to have to figure out something to do for their docs then, because I think that's going to make that a – because now I feel like – no offense to people using Word. Word is a little bit of a lesser version than Google Docs. Google Docs is free. Google Docs does the same thing. But if they can adopt a AI within Microsoft Word,
mm-hmm.
that is going to like depreciate Google Docs
so
pretty quick.
So Google, there's an article in New York Times. Google's brought back in Larry and Sergey to start working on how to implement Lambda, which is their version of this. Now, allegedly, Lambda is even more powerful than ChatGPT, and Lambda has been trained on the open internet. The thing that I think Google is weighing, they have their business model concerns with ads, so it looks like they're trying to introduce Lambda into different products, so into their Google Suite for Business, into the email editor, stuff like that. I think the Rubicon to be crossed is who is going to let the AI out to crawl the open internet first. Mm-hmm. Because that's when things start to get hairy in terms of what can the AI do. And some of the industry reports for people that have worked with systems like this that have been experimented with out on the internet is that you give it instructions and it comes back with some pretty crazy ideas how to accomplish it. Mm-hmm. You got to remember, once the AI is on the internet, if you give it your credentials, it can log into stuff, transfer money. It can start to get really creative with what it's doing.
Yeah. That's some dystopian stuff.
So that,
make me $1 million.
It was described as solving problems in unexpected ways. Whatever that means.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time even wrapping my brain around all of this. It's so powerful.
Because it just has happened so quickly.
Yeah. Like, I understand what's going on and stuff, but like, I just... the fact that, yeah, I could tell it, like, hey, I need to make $1 million by the end of the year. Here's my crap. Figure mm-hmm. it out for me.
And that is, so what's going on in, again, in the industry world of this, and we've been playing with it for a few weeks now, and there's limitations. It's not perfect. You have to prompt it correctly. Like, there's some things there that make it a little clunky right now, which I expect will be smoothed out pretty quickly in the next 6 months. Is the other piece of ChatGPT is when you play with it, is what it will refuse to do and what it will do for you. And so I think you're going to, and this is what they're trying to find, is what is the limit on what you'll allow it to do?
Yeah.
And how do you instruct it on what those limits are?
Yeah. And who defines what those limits are?
Mm-hmm. Corporations. What I think we're going to have for some short period of time is like this AI battle between like the free speech AI that'll just answer your question mm-hmm. and the more censored AI that are trying to filter for like brand safety or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think you'll have this AI competition with the free speech troll AI trying to outwit the censorship AI.
And then they get Twitter accounts and then they fight on Twitter.
I honestly think that is going to happen in the next few months.
It could be so much fun.
Yeah.
And Elon Musk is one of them. What a twist that would be if he's actually just AI this whole time.
Plot twist. Not real. What's interesting to me in the Elon Musk stuff is how variant people's views are of how he's managing Twitter.
Yeah.
Some people are like, oh, he's a genius. This is the right direction. Some people are like, oh, he's destroying it.
He's literally, yeah, they're like, he's like the Antichrist. Yeah. Like, it is such a spectrum.
It'll take a year to see. And you'll only know in like the financial numbers. And it might even take 2 years to see by the financial numbers if it's working or not.
Yeah.
His problem is he pissed so many people off. You're going to have a lot of people who aren't happy. But you just don't know for another probably year or two. Mm-hmm. All right. Last story. Out of Ad Age, Bud Light's new company, Anomaly, replaced Wieden and Kennedy for this year's Super Bowl as their creative agency of record. And the beer moves away from humor and towards something more serious. Do you want to describe the commercial titled Handful?
Yeah, it's a girl that's, you know, at a bar and she has to carry like 5 glasses of beer all filled up.
Why aren't her friends helping her? We don't know.
They're at the table and it's a crowded bar. She picks them up, is like carrying them all in her arms. And she's, you know, carefully weaving through the bar as people are, you know, throwing elbows and dancing and doing all this crazy stuff. And she kind of gets around them, gets to the table and everyone's like, oh yeah, that's awesome. You're a pro. And she's like, I know. And like that, you know, they all have a beer. And how do you feel about that?
Well, the background here is Bud Light has lost a lot of market share in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
I think they've mostly lost market share due to the craft beer movement taking a significant part of their market away from them. I think they are right to experiment to try something different. They know what humor gives them, and they know what showing men in their commercials gets them. So this is not humorous, features a woman. Will it work? Will it increase? I don't know. What I'm concerned for them is they're going to JCPenney themselves. And what I mean is when JCPenney hired the dude who ran the Apple store set up, they tried to change JCPenney and make it very stylish in all these departments and a modern look and these remodels. What happened is they didn't bring in anyone new and they lost the people who are committed to the brand. I'm worried they risk losing the people who are committed to the brand.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong, I think, with them, you know, trying to explore and like maybe target women to be drinking Bud Light. I do think it does really go against their brand of their funny. I mean, we look forward to the Bud Light commercials because they are like a production, I think. And like they've been like that for decades. And I mean, I don't know, man. Like you think about the Dilly Dilly thing with the whole Bud Night and like – I mean, everybody quoted that.
Dilly dilly.
I mean, yeah. it was like a Halloween costume and stuff. Like,
I wonder if pursuing women isn't better done under another brand. Like, you set up, you basically create a new brand, and Coke did this.
Yeah.
Diet Coke had a problem. Dudes thought Diet Coke was a women's drink. Coke launched Coke Zero, put it in a stealth black can, and then dudes drink Coke Zero.
Yeah.
I just wonder if Bud Light wouldn't be better off having something that is basically Bud Light in a different color bottle under a different brand if you wanted to get women.
Essentially, do. It's called Bud Light Seltzer. Like, the fact that they don't just keep their focus on that. Because, like, women, I'm going to make a very bold assumption here, prefer seltzers over beer. Like, maybe not all women.
Uh-huh.
But I think a lot of women do. I think just doing something like that, if they would have done that, maybe, you know, I don't know what I'm trying to say here, man. Like, I think it's...
They just picked the wrong thing to double down on.
Right.
Yeah.
It just, I don't think there was anything wrong with the ads that they were running before. I don't think there was anything wrong with the humor that they were doing before.
Well, you know, conversely, what I've seen from Michelob Ultra, which is kind of a classic, you know, older dude women's beer, is they're going the humorous younger route.
Yeah.
Because they've kind of lucked into younger people drinking Mich Ultra, mm-hmm. kind of stumbled into it on accident, and are reaching for that. So I kind of wonder if you might end up with this exchange. You don't grow, but you just exchange some consumer base.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bud Light over the next few years takes, you know, some of the, like, some more women, some more like casual light drinkers, and then Mich Ultra takes some of the, you know, zany 20 and 30 something male Bud Light drinkers.
It's interesting because before I started working here, I never drank Michelob Ultra. Never. And now, like, this whole office, like, that's our preferred, like, cheap drink to get.
Yeah.
Like, even before that, I'm trying to even think what beers I drank before that. Like, I mean, I drink Yingling, but that's for different reasons. But, like, cheap beer-wise, I don't know. It's interesting that, like, as a group, we all have, like, just simultaneously agreed that we all like Michelob Ultra. And we're all, like, in a millennial...
Yeah.
Category.
Millennial, like older Gen Zer.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple of, yeah, that's interesting. I think it is probably the lightest of light beers. So I think that helps it.
Because we don't even drink Coors. I mean, yeah. Jack does.
Jack does.
Hi, Jack.
Yeah. I don't know why, you know, maybe it's that big skinny can. Looks like a Red Bull can.
It's just that you were just saying, because I Michelob Ultra was kind of like an older person's drink. And I'm like, well, now all I know is young people drink Michelob Ultra. Yeah.
Well, you know, Michelob Ultra, I went through this period where it was like the athletic person's drink. And they had these people running marathons and drinking a Mich Ultra and doing activities and drinking a Mich Ultra. And that didn't, what seemed to happen is just like, people decided if they were going to be drinking a lot, and maybe it's to do with health, their calories, switched to Mich Ultra, and then that picked up. And now the latest Mich Ultra commercials are a zany guy driving around a golf cart for about the Super Bowl.
So what should Bud Light, who should Bud Light be focused on? Like, what should they be doing for their Super Bowl ad?
Well, they have three or four, so we're only seeing one. Mm-hmm. So who knows what's in the others? Man, I just worry for them that brand is so synonymous with humor and a good time and light beer, kind of, you know, very light attitude, that even if their total market share was down, given what the beer market is, that actually may be around the max that they can really achieve, because anything else, they're just going to be trading out audience.
Yeah.
And that they may have been wise just to stick with being funny, maybe try humor that appeals a little more to women, maybe try, you know, experiment with the humor, but stay with the humor.
I have one other question. Do you think their Budweiser commercials speak to a better audience with the Clydesdales?
Yes. With Budweiser, another thing they're doing is positioning the company as a whole. So they're also positioning not just the Budweiser beer, but everything Anheuser-Busch makes. They're often positioning that within a Budweiser commercial. And Budweiser advertising is highly differentiated between demographics. Mm-hmm. The Budweiser advertisements you see on TV tend to be more serious, more like very proud of the heritage and the history. And the Budweiser advertisements you see on the internet are more directly segmented towards different audiences.
Yeah. It's very, and I was just thinking that, because I feel like those commercials always speak to a large majority of an audience. Bud Light is definitely trying to chase a different audience.
Yeah. They're trying to go get a different audience. They're trying to grow the market share for the drink.
Yeah.
I don't know how easy it's going to be to grow the market share and just not have a trade-off. Or worse, you chase away the current people and you don't even bring in the new people, which I think is the most likely thing to happen to them.
Yeah. We'll have to see what the other commercials they do look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other advantage they have, though, is beer preferences are very elastic. they tend to stick with people for a long time.
Yeah.
They start drinking when they're 12 and they develop a preference.
I love that beer I drank when I was 12.
That was the beer I always knew I wanted to drink even when I was 7.
Reminds me of my pa.
I always saw the commercials.
Gosh, that's funny.
All right, anything before we close? Nope. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. As always, if you liked what you heard, leave us a review. Until next time, this has been Of Record. Of Record is hosted by me, Joe Clements, with the assistance of producer Alex Reinhard. Of Record is produced at the Trailway Studio in Tallahassee, Florida. This episode was edited by producer Alex Reinhard. Our theme music is composed and performed by Rob Goki. Special thanks to our entire team here at SDS. You can see more information about the show on our website, podcastofrecord.com. As always, we'd appreciate your reviews and ratings in your podcast app of choice. These ratings and reviews help more people discover the show, which helps us keep delivering quality content each week. Thanks for listening.